This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
I'm Noomi Gilder.
I'm Harriet Taylor.
And you're listening to Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief.
Our picks of this week's tech headlines.
And what we think of them.
We're aiming for 50% informative, 50% fun.
Let's dive in.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief. You've got myself, Harriet Taylor.
And I'm Noomi Gilder. Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am good. Bit of a cold. I think it's just the British weather at the moment. But apart from that, amazing.
Hopefully we can muddle through this week's episode and then you can have a little bit of vocal rest.
I hope so. Really do. Probably not going to have, but... here we are. What have we got up this week then?
Our first story is from Meta. They've released their plans to put an internet cable in the sea, subsea cable, spanning the globe. It's going to be the longest subsea cable that we have so far. They called it Project Waterworth, and it will connect the US, India, South Africa, Brazil, and other regions. It will be the longest underwater cable project when completed, which I find crazy because I don't think many people know that there are so many cables in the ocean already.
Yeah, it is crazy to think how much is sort of wrapped around the world, right? And like, it's transversal. If you're going to have to use the ocean.
Yeah, and everyone kind of thinks, oh, we're in this digital age where everything is in the cloud and through Wi-Fi. And actually, you know, for most of our data transfer, 95% of the world's internet traffic is transferred through undersea cables. So, you know, it's not in the air at all. It's literally, we still have to plug it in and transmit it. And the best way that we can do that around the planet is putting them in the sea.
Why do you think this isn't talked about more? Do you think there's a reason?
I honestly just think it's probably because most people, they're not electrical engineers or electronic engineers having like an internet protocol lesson, you know? So it's just like not relevant to a lot of people. But this is going to be the longest cable to date. It will use a 24 fiber pair system to give it higher capacity.
That is a big cable. I mean, I guess pipes for gas and, you know, other sort of natural sources of energy production get made all the time, right? To transfer things in between countries. So it does make sense that this would happen. Do you remember the chat we had the other week about data centers on the moon? And we were trying to discuss how you'd get the data back down. And we're like, a big cable. Technically, that's what we're doing between the countries.
That is right? Such a good point. So maybe it's not as a crazy idea as we thought.
But I thought when we made that joke that maybe there's something we don't know that people are doing.
And here we are.
Maybe there is a way to transfer data lossly. Although to be fair, I actually had a chat with someone after we had this chat on the podcast. And they mentioned that there is a way to store data and transfer it and energy as well. Or like you... I don't know, there was some studies going on. I'm going to try and find them, like discuss it next week, that outweighs the energy it would take to go up and down from the moon. And he sounded pretty convinced with his knowledge. So it's probably worth a chat, that one.
So maybe it is going to happen. And we'll have interconnectivity on the moon and in the sea.
Yeah, because I feel like we're just like wrapping the world up in a giant belt, right? If we're just covering it in wires.
It does look like that on the article. The map is just like this little blue line wibbling around. Yeah.
Why is Meta doing this, though?
Well, I guess they're kind of like wanting to be world leaders in connectivity and technology. You know, a lot of their products are reliant on the internet. So maybe that is, you know, a priority for them.
It's interesting it's them and not like a telecoms provider.
Yeah, it's true.
Because I'm just trying to think then, like, why do they care so much about this? Like, surely there's internet already in India, right? And North Africa and, like, other areas that they're saying this cable will go to. Why do they need a Meta cable to go there?
I think they're saying, like, tech firms that serve as major providers of web services have invested a lot in cable infrastructure. So we're seeing a shift that they're increasingly being laid by these large technology companies. So it kind of makes sense that, that those were people that have a stake in it, they're in the digital market space, want to then be in control of the connectivity.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I think it's good to have these kind of news stories where I think people will learn a bit more about how it works, and that we're going to have a 50,000 kilometre cable just spanning around the world.
Yeah, this is literally challenging all my like preconceptions of up-to-date internet. I generally thought we were mainly using like DF.
Maybe we should take an online course.
Literally intro to the internet infrastructure. Who knows?
Brush up our skills. Let's move on to our next topic.
Yeah. So this is still on the topic of AI, I guess, in a sense of, you know, Meta are creating that cable to help their AI givings in future. So Musk's releases artificial intelligence model Grok 3 claims better performance than rivals in early testing. So the naming is interesting. It's giving Disney character villain. I'm not sure how you feel.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm not a big fan of the name Grok. I don't know, it's cringe to me. I find it a little bit cringe. I understand that it is obviously so difficult to come up with original ideas for naming of products, and you want something that's catchy and that's going to stick in people's minds. There's loads of research around how important that is and how difficult it is. But I just wouldn't have gone with Grok.
Yeah, Grok 3, unless it stands for something that we don't know.
Yeah,
but I mean,
yeah.
Grok 2 exists, so clearly yeah. The name's been around. So what this Grok 3 claims to do is outperform offerings from OpenAI and China's DeepSeek based on early testing, which included standardized tests on math, science and coding. I don't know how people are measuring this.
Mm.
And also, it just seems very Elon Musk-esque to say, oh, I've suddenly come up with something better and quicker than everything that's just been released and not actually shown any proof. But maybe I am just slightly biased about not good. But yeah, the team said it was also launching a new product called Deep Search, which would act as a next generation search engine as well.
I wonder how DeepSeek feel about this.
Yeah, and I wonder how that ties in with, because there's been a lot of discussion recently of people using AI to do standard searches that you could do with a search engine that wouldn't use as much energy.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder how this all ties in. The next generation search engine, will that be using AI, or will it be like trying to decide whether to or whether to use non-AI? Like, that actually could be something good.
Yeah. If you have it all integrated into one system, and then it can make that decision for you of whether to use a standard search engine or...
I think that we need that.
I also just think it's interesting that it's rolled out to... It's for Premium X subscribers. You know, it is behind a paywall.
I mean, I don't actually know anyone that pays for X, if I'm honest. I think people are still on there because they refuse to leave because they were there first. But maybe it's different over in America, to be honest. Like, I don't think I would pay for a subscription just to use it, but I'm sure they must have done research to prove that, you know, it is a viable product. What do you think?
Yeah. Do you pay for ChatGPT? Do you have a premium subscription for OpenAI?
No, I don't. The only AI I really use is if I'm just wanting to refactor some code that I think that can be better and my brain just can't think of how to refactor it. Like, but most of the time, like, I've tested it with other bits of code that I've been doing and it doesn't always generate nice stuff. So that's all I'd really use it for. I use it for planning actually as well. And I use like Notion with AI too, with ChatGPT, to make like little templates and stuff. But I don't do enough resource heavy stuff to pay for it. I did get the trial though at one point. What about you?
Yeah, I don't pay for it. I have, when I do use it, which I try and, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast before, I do try and limit my AI usage. I just use the free version. I think there are benefits to the premium version of like having up-to-date articles and stuff. Most people that I know, the way that they use AI, they're using these free tools that are being integrated already in existing services. So either the free ChatGPT or now obviously we're getting AI integration into the Google suite. So I would find it interesting to know, is it just a bonus for the people that are paying for X Premium, or do you think there would be people that are like, oh, I will get X Premium because I want to use this specific AI? And I think it's also really difficult for a user because it's such a new tool.
Yeah.
Unless you're like really in the space and an expert, most people that are kind of starting to dabble with using AI, I don't think they would have a very quick understanding of what would differentiate the offerings.
Yeah, like unless you're doing something that you need, like super complicated, or training some like, you know, models, or like you've got lots of data, I don't think the everyday user will need a paid version of AI, really.
And also, like, I don't know what they can offer that would make you go, like, for me, I don't know what DeepSeek offers versus what ChatGPT offers, what Grok 3 offers, that would make me pick one or the other. You know, I've used ChatGPT the most just because it's been around the longest, but not because I'm like, oh, that's the better software.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it is interesting of like how are, you know, not just X going to do this, but other companies as well, the providers of DeepSeek and OpenAI, how are they, now that you're getting more competitors, going to differentiate themselves in the market and show that they've got the best product?
Yeah, and why do we need so many different AI products as well? This is what I would say, like, you know, if people are going to start releasing their own, there needs to be a decent use case for it. Obviously, we wouldn't competitive market, but like, I've just been reading sort of the comments at the World Government Summit in Dubai when Elon Musk sort of spoke about it, and he just dubbed the model scary smart, with powerful reasoning capabilities, claimed it outperformed all other existing models in XAI's internal tests. But again, like, what existing models? What is it that they're testing for? What are we trying to achieve with this? Like, what's this AI going to be for? I don't know. Maybe this is my own limitations in knowledge about AI applications, but I think for the general user, a lot of this type of discourse and who they decide to use might just be what they prefer. Like, if you're a big fan of Elon Musk and X, you're probably going to go use Grok and pay for it because you trust his influence and tech expertise. Whereas if you're a fan of open source, you might go for DeepSeek. Or if you're a fan of, you know, just the original, the OG, you'd use ChatGPT, like OpenAI. I think for the normal user, it's going to be quite hard for them to decide who to go for.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like choosing a browser, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think it will be kind of interesting to see, will these companies start, like, marketing themselves to differentiate themselves and to convince users to pick them over the alternatives.
Yeah, I think at the moment, OpenAI probably has a bit of a open goal because they've got that partnership with Apple. And then I guess Google has its own that it's been developing in-house, Gemini. So what you have in your mobile devices is generally going to outperform having to install additional software, unless you're Samsung, because no one uses the Samsung browser. So I guess, I don't know. But yeah, I can see those two as the sort of main players moving forward at the moment. But let's see what X is, isn't it?
I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Let's move into a slightly different field for our last story. I love space. I never really did anything at uni to do with space, but it's always kind of like been a fascination of mine. And there's been some research published in Nature this week where they have used new 3D mapping of a planet outside of our solar system for the first time. So it's the first time they've been able to kind of like make a 3D model of a planet that is not in our solar system. And they say that it's provided like a major breakthrough of the understanding of atmosphere and weather of alien worlds. Because basically this planet that they found is like a little bit wild.
Wow.
It's called WASP-121b or Tylos. It sits around 900 light years away, and they describe it as an ultra-hot Jupiter. And it's so close to its star in its solar system that each year on that planet lasts only 30 of our hours.
Wow, so that is quick.
So it's super close, it's super hot because it's so close to the star. And astronomers were able to use the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope, which is one of my favourite names for something ever. Like, just call it what it is, babe. And they found that this planet has like a jet stream that rotates material around the planet's equator including titanium, and then they have like a separate flow at lower levels that moves gas from the hot side to the cooler side, and they have never observed this kind of climate on any other planet.
I love how they can work this out just from a telescope as well. Like,
yeah,
that's crazy.
It's incredible.
That sounds hot.
Yeah.
Very, very, very hot.
So it's incredible that they've been able to kind of like map this out and get. And also, if you think about it, the fact that we can get such detailed information about something that is so far away.
Yeah.
Is crazy.
I mean, it just sounds as well like it's disrupted our usual sort of thinking about weather as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
How that works.
And I kind of love when stuff like this happens, where it's like, oh, maybe this model of thinking we had actually only describes this very small example.
Yeah.
And now, turns out, everything else in the universe is just doing something else.
Also, the titanium in the jet stream, that's wild. Like, that just, obviously it's very, very, very hot, but I mean, it sounds pretty as well.
And expensive.
It sounds shiny.
Let's go there.
I want to see it now.
The pictures on the article, it's a visual representation. Because I don't think with that telescope, they would have got like images. I'm wondering if it's that they got like infrared data,
yeah,
and other types of data that they then were able to construct these maps from.
Yeah, that would make sense actually.
Because the image that they've got in this article looks very like a rudimentary computer generation, which would make sense for, yeah, something that's 900 light years away. It's not going to be like a 4K image, is it?
Maybe if we get a cable long enough. So it sounds like it's just like a constant hurricane going on this planet then, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wonder how long it's been there.
And like, is it always been like that, or
have you always been like this?
Have you always been like this?
Why are you so hot?
Just us crushing on a planet.
How ridiculous.
But I think it'd be cool. Are they like, what I'm kind of hoping is this, the telescope, they're just going to like do this for every planet that they find, and then just see, you know, what else are we going to find out there?
And then we can thirst over it, yeah.
Yeah. I like a range, you know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll find
eligible
a cool
planet
next.
Number one.
Hey, we're going to have to bounce to another planet soon, so we'll get the contenders ready.
You, yeah, exactly. Maybe not this one. I think this one's a little too hot for me.
Yeah.
I appreciate a warm climate, but liquid titanium might be too far. Right, we will leave this week's episode on the topic of thirsting over planets.
Yeah, a positive note for a positive week.
Thanks so much for listening to Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief. I'm Numi.
I'm Harriet, and you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube Shorts. It's Tech Girl Energy everywhere.
See you next week.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.